Welcome to AWARE. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Good afternoon. Welcome to the AWARE Show. Hi, this is Lisa Garr. Great to be with you guys today, as always. Just a reminder, coming up this weekend is the Ultimate Business Seminar. It's the multi-speaker event that's going on at the LAX Radisson Hotel. And it's Christopher Howard's company, but they're putting on this amazing event. There's, I think, 12 speakers that are going to be on. The first day, Chris has offered for free to the AWARE Show listeners. So I just wanted to let you know, if you haven't already called, this is a great time to do it. It's 888-877-8550. Alex Mendozian is going to be speaking, Robert Allen, amazing people over there, all about how you can break through different types of wealth strategies in your life and unlock business potentials that could help you move to the next level. Rather than waiting for something to come to you, this is something that puts you in a direct action, and people that can tell you how to do it, and they've done it in very easy ways, using the internet and all sorts of different ways. So it's all that whole thing about letting go of past programming that keeps us stuck or doesn't enable us to move anywhere in our lives, and these are the tools, the actual action on how to do that. So you can call there, 888-877-8550, all sorts of opportunities there. Yesterday we were talking on the show about how to create your own reality, and we've spoken about this a lot on the AWARE Show. This is a major topic of our show. A lot of people have seen The Secret and What the Bleep and all these great films that talk about manifestation and so forth. But it can be anything that you want to manifest. I mean, it could be, it doesn't have to be wealth and things and stuff. This could be beingness. This could be travel. This could be family. This could be relationships. Anything that improves the quality of your life the way that you know how to improve. And only you know that. And that is also something that takes some time, is really, really finding out what it is that you want to create. Now, there's ways to do this, and there's all sorts of different disciplines and tools and so forth that you can use to do this on your own. But why not get a bunch of other people to help you too? And on the flip side of that, or I should say, as the cycle goes, why not help a bunch of other people help create their intentions as well? Now we're talking. Lynn McTaggart is joining us on the air. She is just a visionary, groundbreaking thinker. She's an internationally recognized spokesperson on the science of spirituality. And her book called The Intention Experiment is the world's largest mind over matter internet web-based experiments that Lynn and other leading scientists around the world are testing the true power of our thoughts to change the world. Incredible work. Welcome to the show, Lynn. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, you're welcome. It's so much fun to be here.
Oh, it's so much fun of what you're doing. I think you're up to some cool stuff. So let's talk about it. How did you come up with the whole idea of the intention experiment, and what exactly is it?
Okay. Well, I kept seeing a lot of information and scientific studies about the ability of mind to affect physical matter. And this was a lot of research I had studied and looked at for my first book, The Field. Mm-hmm. And it was a bit of unfinished business. I kept thinking to myself, well, if this is true, if consciousness is an actual energy with the ability to affect physical matter, I wanted to know, you know, exactly what you can do with this. You know, what can we do with our thoughts? Can I, you know, stop a train in its tracks with my thoughts? Or can I help my kids pass their math test with my thoughts? You know,
right.
What can I do? And, you know, can I help the planet? Can I do something to alleviate the catalog of suffering out there on the planet with my thoughts? So I wanted to look at this, and I was particularly interested in the idea of group mind, you know, that lots of people trained on the same target is going to magnify the effect. And there was a lot of information out there about this. When I studied it, it was very tantalizing but not conclusive. You couldn't really say this is definitely the case. So my husband one night turned to me and he said, well, why don't you do these experiments yourself? And that sounded completely preposterous to me because I'm not a scientist. I'm a writer. But then I, the last experiment I did was in 10th grade biology class. It was me who dissected the frog because my lab partner, who was a guy, fainted.
Okay.
So I
knew nothing about
it. I started thinking about it, and I thought, well, I've got loads of readers around the world. The field is in 20 languages or so. And I know many, many scientists out there, too. And if I put them together, I could do this via the Internet. That would be one way my website could unite the scientists and their studies with all of the people. I could invite my readers to be part of these experiments, and we'd have the biggest global laboratory in history. And so that's what we're doing.
So now you've got thousands and thousands of people from, what, 30 countries around the world?
80 countries around the world and counting.
God! Now, okay, so what is an example? Can you give us an example of one of the experiments? I don't know if you can choose one that you can give us the best example. Okay.
Well, one of my favorite has to do with sending an intention to make plants grow faster. I mean, we've started with baby steps, and now we're about to take a few big, giant steps. But one of the first ones we did was just seeing if we could affect a physical process with the plant. And we started with plants because plants are easy. You don't have to go through big review boards to get permission, you know. And we just tried to change the little light emissions coming from a leaf, and all living things emit a tiny current of light. Scientists know this now. So we tried to affect that. That was our first study. And we did, and we had a huge effect on it. We tried to make this leaf increase its light, and at the leaf, according to very, very fine CCD cameras recorded at the University of Arizona, demonstrated that our leaf under these conditions was truly glowing.
Wow.
So we were really impressed by this, and we tried it on the Internet, and we rolled it out, and we had 10,000 people trying to get on our website at the same time, and at that point, the website keeled over. So we learned that trying to solve our problems, having thousands of people around the world looking at the same web page at exactly the same time, were far more complicated than proving the power of intention.
Okay. Okay.
So we got some sophisticated web people, and we rented a lot of bandwidth space from the people who power up American Idol.
Oh, you could rent that. That's
interesting. You can rent it for little short periods of time.
Ah.
And then we moved on. We did that experiment. It worked. And we moved on to my favorite experiment, which is trying to make seeds grow faster with your thoughts. And so we started with, and the scientists who are at the University of Arizona under Dr. Gary Schwartz, the noted psychologist, created very, very controlled experiments where we had four sets of seeds, and we chose to send intention to just one set, and the rest of them were to act as controls. And I've been traveling around the world speaking before many audiences. So I was going to be in Australia, and I thought, this is a really great test. I'm going to be thousands of miles away from those little seeds. So I got my audience there of about 600.
Oh, wow.
To choose a set of seeds. And we sent intention to those seeds to grow faster and to sprout earlier than the others. And then the scientists who did not know which seeds we chose, the scientists, remember, are in Tucson, Arizona. We're in Sydney, Australia.
Okay.
Planted all four sets of seeds, and lo and behold, the seed sent intention grew significantly higher than the controls. And we even had a controlled experiment of the controls where we then planted four sets of seeds but had no intention sent to any of them. So they were to act as a second-level control. And once again, the seed sent intention were the ones that grew higher than anything.
Now, were the group with you in Sydney, were they able to see the seeds?
No, we couldn't. They had a photograph of the seeds.
Okay.
We had, instead of a webcam image, we just had a photograph of all four, and that seems to be enough to hook consciousness up with its target.
Okay, now, what is the intention? What do you say? What do you set?
We set a very specific intention, and I think, you know, that's a really important part of any kind of intention in your own life. I wanted to find out, again, how intention works and how you do intention, because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about it.
Yeah, definitely.
A huge misunderstanding that if you just have some happy thoughts, everything's going to come your way and all your lights are going to turn green. So I interviewed many, many, many intention masters, Qigong masters, master healers, Buddhist monks, Native Americans, people like that who use intention to really amazing effect, you know, who can change their body temperature by 20 degrees and things like that. And many of them had, although they would use different techniques, they boil down to many common strains. And I distilled from all those different traditions a simple program that people could use to really improve intention. And I call it powering up, because I discovered that when people are sending an intention, it's not like they're in a calm state. You know, we always think of a meditative state as a calm state where your brain slows down. In these instances, these are people where their brain is speeding up to something much faster than ordinary waking consciousness. It's a very highly focused mind state where you are attending with every pore of your body.
But you're not pushing.
You're not pushing. You're letting go. You're letting go, but you are absolutely in a quiet hyper-awareness. I call it entering hyperspace.
Well, that's cool.
So
I like that concept. I mean, I like that visual, too. So you have a group of, I mean, the example in Sydney, you had 600 people. Were they chanting?
No. They're in a quiet.
Well,
what I do is I teach people, and I teach people in our workshops, too, to do this, where you get into a highly focused mind state using your five senses. So you are not just feeling the moment, you know, just quietly in the moment. You are smelling the moment. You are hearing the moment. Mm. You are tactilely feeling the moment. You are just in your body in a state of quiet receptivity and hyper awareness. And you have to learn certain techniques to get into that very, very hyper aware state. And getting back to your question, what I also teach people is how to make a very, very specific intention. You know, many people think that you just have a general thought. Like a lot of people have the thought, I want to be rich.
Right.
And it's not very specific. And it's not really what they want. They don't necessarily want lots of stuff, although they may do. But probably what they really want is freedom. They probably want to be free of the job that they're working at, or they want to be free of bills. They want to have just enough to pay everything and just to feel comfortable. They don't necessarily want to accumulate millions. So you have to be really specific. I'll give you an example of me not being specific.
Okay.
Last year, like every other woman on the planet, bathing suit weather was coming up, and I say to myself, I'd really like to lose 5 pounds.
Okay.
And before I know what I'm doing, I immediately get hit with a terrible stomach flu, and I am absolutely sick as a dog for 2 weeks, and you know what? I lost my 5 pounds. So I kind of sat back and I went, oh my goodness, I realized what I did. I sent the universe a message, and I said I want to lose weight, I just didn't specify how.
Okay, question. So now, I want to create something that involves other people. And those other people might not be in the same, like, alignment with me or in the same type of frequency as I am, whatever you call it. How do you get other parties to align on the intention if they don't believe in what you're talking about? Like, how did you get those people from American Idol who powered the, you know, power Idol to power the intention experiment? I mean, when you talked to them, were you talking Greek to them?
All I did was rent their website. Web space.
All right. Well, back to my other question.
I asked readers, you know, I asked readers of my book to be involved. The people who are involved are people who deliberately sign up to be involved.
Okay.
And while there might be one or two spoilers out there, I make it difficult enough so that people, you know, really want to be motivated to participate.
All right.
And I say difficult enough. They have to sign up. They get instructions. They have to practice. That kind of thing. They learn how to do intention. Now, to answer your question, I think it is difficult because there are certain studies, for instance, of healers that show when the healers are sending intention to people who believe what they believe, that it works much better.
Right.
So I think you have to have an alignment. What you're talking about when you're sending intention from one person to another is getting into a kind of mental resonance, a physical resonance, and it's more than a mental resonance. There's a lot of studies showing that when one person says and sends intention to another, their brainwaves start working in tandem. And when people send healing to another in an altruistic way, and this is why we teach this in our workshop, they go into a kind of limbic resonance. They are marching to the same beat. It's like two bodies become one.
That's interesting.
And we also find this in other studies where loving couples sending intention to each other, the one sending intention, it's like he entrains the recipient. Their heart waves start going in resonance, their brain waves, their skin conductance, you know, the way their blood flows to their extremities, their gut, everything, so many different physiological systems begin marching in tandem.
Well,
so
it
again, it's like two bodies become one.
That's interesting. And it's also about, as you said, setting your original goal or what it is that you really want out of it. But you did the water experiment, and you took polluted water, which was not necessarily in alignment with the frequency of, I'm not using the right word there, but, you know, it wasn't that best pH balance, right?
Right.
So how did that work?
Well, we've done three water experiments, and we've tried to do very simple things. Remember, we're taking baby steps here. Our intention experiment has been going for a year, and we're starting to move up and do things, you know, more complicated things. We've run our seed experiment, for instance, six times, and every single time, whether it's from over the internet, a small group in New York, or a big group in Sydney, or anywhere, has had a big effect. And so that's worked every time. Water, we're very interested in water and doing lots of experiments with water because human beings are 80% water. Water is necessary to life. Most of our food is kind of 80 to 90% water. So if we can change water in some way, we can have a big effect. So we've been trying to do simple things like just change the way the molecules cluster together. And the reason that's important is that some scientists postulate that healing water, like Lourdes, has a different clustering of molecules than ordinary water. So we've tried that with two studies with Russian physicist Konstantin Korotkov, and we've demonstrated that the water has changed with using a kind of system that measures light emissions and how they go through water. So then we've moved on to working with Rustam Roy, who is one of the world's leading experts on water at Penn State University. And he found with that experiment, we used a special equipment called the Raman spectroscopy, a very complicated kind of equipment, measuring, again, light emissions. The study demonstrated something happened. He felt we needed more sophisticated equipment. So he's going back, getting it, and we're going to move on to that. So we've demonstrated we have an effect, but we want to try to push the boat out a bit more with this. So one of our upcoming experiments is going to be trying to mutate bacteria in water.
Wow.
Because bacteria easily mutates, and there have been some studies showing that intention can affect it. And if we can change bad bacteria into good bacteria, mm-hmm. I mean, that is a real step to cleaning up polluted water.
Yeah.
So our intention experiments have gone from just seeing if we can have any kind of an effect on a living system to starting to move into ways to affect the world in some positive way.
Do you feel that it works better when you have large groups of people doing this intention, or does this work individually better?
Well, this is the really interesting thing about it. I think the group has a magnified effect. There's no doubt about that.
Uh-huh, it's compounded. Mm-hmm.
There's a compounded effect. Now, we've done studies with, as I say, our seeds experiments. We had just a little group of 100 from Rhinebeck, New York. They had an effect, same effect, on seeds sitting in Tucson, Arizona, as another study using the people from Sydney, Australia, who were many more thousand miles away in a much larger group. And we've had the same effect as thousands of people scattered around the globe just coming to do the study via our internet site, which is how we run our general experiments. You know, we invite everybody to come on the internet site, theintentionexperiment.com.
Okay.
But the one group that had a more magnified effect, where the seeds actually grew twice as high as all the controls, was a group I spoke before of experienced healers who had been used to using techniques not unlike my powering up techniques. So this indicated to me that experience counts. And that's been my impression, that everybody can do intention, but experience matters. It's a matter of practice and learning certain techniques, and that's what I teach.
Well, that makes sense, because the more you practice it, you learn different things about how to do it and what works better for you, and you don't phase out as much, and you can hold the focus longer. I mean, it's like practicing exercise or anything else, I would think.
Well, yes, and the other thing that's interesting, though, is when you talked about the size of group, one of the things we've been working with and demonstrating in our workshops is that small groups have this extraordinary powerful effect. We've been doing this on our website, too. Last year, I got a letter from a guy called Don Berry, who is a Vietnam vet, and he has ankylosing spondylitis. He can't move his spine. And he wrote to me and said, I'll do one of your intention experiments, because I've got so much medical stuff on me and x-rays and everything else, that if there's any change, that will be a kind of medical miracle.
Huh.
So, and he said he was in constant pain.
Okay.
So I invited the readers to start sending him intention twice a week. And he wrote me, and I said, Don, keep a diary. So he wrote me 3 months later and said, my pain is way down. And then he wrote me a few months after that, and he said, my pain is gone.
Wow.
And not only that, I moved the other day, and my doctor almost fell off his chair. So I was really encouraged by this, and I thought, well, you know, maybe we should try another kind of experiment. Let's do an intention of the week, and we'll choose somebody with a health challenge. Uh-huh. You know, the readers can write in nominating someone, and we'll just put them on our website and ask the readers to send an intention to that person, have a photo there. And so every weekend, it's 9 a.m. L.A. time, 5 p.m. where I come from in London, our readers around the world send intention to that person. And we've had some incredible stories.
I saw one on your website now.
Yeah, well, we have amazing stories. We've got stories of, you know, of people with MS who say that they're much better. We have two people said they felt their cancer had gone into remission. We had one woman who was who wrote in because her 16-year-old daughter ran away. Really angry young girl who was not communicating with her parents. So we sent an intention for them to start communicating. And the young daughter, who had this really angry gothic type of MySpace page, came home 3 weeks later, says her mother, and started to open up and communicate with them, told her exactly what was wrong. And the best thing of all, her mother said elatedly, is her MySpace page, which had been so angry, was now pink.
Ah.
So I thought, wow, that's really interesting.
Well, I wonder if this could work for things like lost children. I mean, God, those break my heart when I see that. And you could get together a group to set an intention to reach, rather than just sending out search parties. You can do something, that's usually the hardest part, is sitting and waiting. And you
yes.
can do something about it by setting up intention groups in your home to bring back the lost children or lost pets. I mean, there's a lot that you can do with this if you're saying it really works.
No, Lisa, we actually did this with Madeline McCann, that little British girl who was taken in Portugal last year. I invited particularly any remote viewers out there to write into our website, because we have a big list of audience. And we had a remarkable results, where there was a lot of overlap. So I collated that and I sent it to the McCanns. I don't know if they, you know, we never heard back from them. But exactly, this kind of occurred to me. And then we found, you know, we've been encouraging our readers to create their own little groups on our website. You know, it's like a little social network site of intention.
Uh-huh.
And I was speaking somewhere in Dallas, and a guy came up to me and said, I'm one of your readers. I'm on your website. I have a little group, and we speak, and we send intention. And I was in a gas explosion, and my hands were really badly burned. So my wife got on the website and started telling the other group about this, and they sent me intention. And I was supposed to be in the hospital for months and to have skin grafts, and I got out in 6 days.
Wow.
And my doctor thinks I'm a medical miracle.
Well, okay, you said that there was a specific way to set these intentions. Is this something that you could teach us over the air that would be, you know, fairly short, but we've still got a half an hour.
I know. Well, I can just talk to you about, it's kind of hard to teach a whole thing. I mean,
sure.
It's what I do for it, a whole weekend at our workshop.
Oh, I understand. Okay.
One in Los Angeles
yeah.
this weekend at the Woodland Hills Marriott, the Warner Center.
Oh, cool. That's
from
right
Friday
near
night to Sunday. So I'm
nice.
Here, and we're teaching people intention. And we're working with these small groups. And what is exciting is, from these ideas, we've started working teaching people to work in the small group, because what we're finding is that this whole resonance effect that happens between people seems to magnify the effect, and that's the thing that is remarkable. There's something about the connection. And so they may be little groups of eight, but we have people working on healing challenges, you know, health challenges in the audience.
Wow.
And what's interesting is, and then we have feedback the next day after there's these intentions, and we find these incredible stories where people are saying, I had a migraine for, you know, 12 years and suddenly I don't have it anymore. And, or someone else says, my leg feels the best that it has been, or, you know, whatever. We're getting this kind of story, and also we're asking the healer what's happening, and the healer is also reporting feeling better. And it's, there is this interesting kind of resonance thing that's going on here with this group intention that creates, and it's connection, that the altruism of it heals the person sending it and helps the person sending it.
So this is my
I suppose my big message and the thing that I work on and teach people in these workshops. Most people think that intention is about getting more stuff and sending intention to yourself, and that's the most effective way to get what you want in your life. And I have no problem with people wanting to get something in their life and wanting to have a successful, happy, abundant life. But I'm not sure that's the root, the little selfish way of me, me, me. I think what I found from the science is that we live a half-life of who we really are. We are actually part of a giant whole, a giant energy field. I called it the field, a giant quantum energy field. And in our most nethermost level, we are all connected. Mm. And we have grand abilities. We are senders and receivers of information at every moment. And that when you learn to connect back into this, when you learn to be a better receiver and sender of information, miracles happen. But in the collective, and that's why we're creating the small groups, because manifesting on your own is another instance of simply being isolated and living out your life in this sense of separation. And it's not a true state of being. I think we are all connected. And to work that to the most profound level is to use intention as a group and find the power of the group.
That makes the most sense, because it's cyclical anyway, and I've always seen the most success is when you're helping others. So it could be personal, it could be healing, it could be for the other people. It always happens when you're focused on helping others. A listener is calling in to ask how they can intend to end the war. Have you done anything about that or along those lines?
Well, interesting that she asks, or he asks. We wanted to do big intentions now and start moving, pushing the boat out and doing something a bit more more related to the problems on the planet. Mm-hmm. And so I've been kicking around for a long time a peace intention experiment. And I was very inspired by a lot of work by the transcendental meditation people, showing that when a certain percentage of meditators are in a city, the crime rate goes down. So I started telling this to people, and I was on Deepak Chopra's radio show, and when I told him, he said, I love this idea, let's get the Alliance for New Humanity behind this. Then I told the Association for Global New Thought, and they said, I love this idea, let's get all of our churches involved. Then I told, you know, the Unity churches, they want all their churches involved, and so on and so forth, and the Oneness Foundation, and before I knew it, I've got something like a Live Aid of intention experiment planned for the autumn, which is September 14th. So what our plan is to get thousands of people, maybe hundreds of thousands of people around the globe, including entire churches, to send intention on these particular days to lower violence in certain hotspots around the world. And it would be wonderful to include Iraq among them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember, though, it's not just a meditation for peace. I'm actually trying to do a serious, well-controlled scientific experiment. So I've got a team of scientists working on this at the moment, planning the protocol, and I'm asking them to, you know, create a very, very airtight experiment.
I was wondering, I mean, because peace is, it's more vague.
Exactly. You have to study the crime rate, but you have to also look for certain confounding factors, as they call them. Like, sometimes the crime rate just goes up because it's hot. So you have to remove heat as a problem, you know, the temperature as a problem. Or sometimes there's more crime when there's a full moon. So you have to make sure that it's not on the time then, or if it is, you have to control for that. So they will look at all those kinds of things and probably pick a very similar city.
Well,
and not send intention there, and then look at, compare the results.
I see. So you really do this. So you did a mini Gaia project where you did like a simulation of an artificially raised temperature in an ecosphere. How did
we're
that
working
work?
On that at the moment, Lisa. We're building a little ecosphere that will be that will have little plants and animals in it, and we're now looking at creating an experiment where we would try to lower CO2 levels or lower the temperature, which again would have, you know, big implications if we can do this.
Now, so then, do you have to give the intention very specifically where it's done in a positive way, it's done in a specific way? I mean, is that part of this whole thing?
Yeah. I mean, again, you wouldn't want to, let's say our peace intention experiment, we wouldn't just send, I want peace in the Middle East.
Okay.
We would pick a particular city. We would show people that city. We would say, I want to reduce crime by 5% or 10%. We usually would say it in a positive way, and you know, instead of a violent study, we would want a peace study, you know. And we would try to say, we usually say, you know, let's say you're working on a cancer patient, you wouldn't want to end cancer, you'd want them to recover their health.
Okay.
So you sort of phrase it in a positive way. So I think what is really important, and one really key element that we work on with people, is understanding what it is they really want and then asking exactly for that.
Okay. And so it's about specificity again.
It's about specificity. I mean, a wonderful other example of that is Heather Mills McCartney, Paul McCartney's ex-wife. She wanted fame really badly, really badly. And I guess she just didn't specify how. So she got to be one of the most famous people for a while, married to one of the most famous men in the world. But it's now infamous. I mean, the British press have picked up every possible skeleton in her closet.
Mm-hmm.
And she's an object of ridicule. It's really awful to watch what's happened.
That
is all about, I think, not sending the right intention out.
Well, let me ask you about the people who had the remissions, the spontaneous remissions. Did you follow up with them? Did they stay in remission?
We are in the process of following up on all of our intentions of the week and finding out what's happened over time. So I'll be able to report that soon on our websites. I mean, what we're hearing now, and as I say, it's kind of been an intention experiment for us, is we're just hearing good stories over and over and over again of people who don't even know the intention is being sent to them suddenly being in some kind of a good space, or even the intention to send the intention. We have one guy who wrote us, we were going to put him on as an intention experiment because he was having an operation. We didn't get to it yet, but he sailed through it in the knowledge that he was going to be an intention experiment.
Wow.
And he did far better than expected. Now, that may just be the power of suggestion. But, you know, the question is, who cares?
Well, I took a great course. Part of my master's program was with this professor, Jeffrey Mishlove, and he's big into the skeptics. I mean, he is definitely one of us in terms of thinking along the lines of enlightenment. But his main focus is on skepticism and what hasn't been turned over in order to get to the bottom of what is truth and what is real. So how do you deal with the skeptics on this issue?
Well, I deal with them in terms of creating an intention experiment. Remember, the main body of my work is scientific, you know, it's scientifically validated. All of the material in the intention experiment, the book, is all about the science of intention. So it's not just about me deciding on this technique or that technique. It's based on some form of science and distilling that into a practical program. And even our intentions of the week, we're trying to create some sort of technique of looking at any kind of change scientifically. So what I try to do is bring science on the table.
Well,
and to say, if, for instance, that last water study I told you about, it was not conclusive. So I don't have a problem saying, well, the study that we had wasn't conclusive, you know, because telling the truth is always going to further the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel sometimes, you know, science is about asking good questions. Sometimes you don't ask the right questions. So it doesn't mean intention doesn't work. It means your experiment was wrongly designed, perhaps. So I think, you know, the biggest answer to the questions are the 50, or the skeptics, for me, are the 50 pages of notes and bibliography in my book. And, you know, it's just, I've got thousands of references that demonstrate, you know, that there's a huge science out there.
Well, you can also, there's the observer effect as well, where the intention of the person, but the outcome of that's going to be good. I mean, so what if there's an observer effect? You still get a good outcome, right?
Well, there is, that we know there's an observer effect. I mean, we know from quantum physics that, you know, that particles are not a set entity. They're a, you know, they're all possible selves all at the same moment. And it's only with the observation of them that they collapse down to a single thing and this potential of something becomes something real. So even traditional quantum physicists believe in the observer effect or understand the observer effect. So what this is suggesting to all of us is that we somehow are part and parcel and intrinsic to creating our reality, and that, you know, for me, that also means that we may be, given the fact that things at their most elemental are only a potential of something, that we must be intrinsic also to influencing it, maybe changing it in one way or another. So you're right, getting back to the experiments, an observer, the experimenter and his beliefs will have an effect on the outcome. So at the moment, we're not working with skeptics. We're working with scientists who are at least open to the possibility that this will work.
And that's good. I mean, that's great. I read once about this experiment that was done with the fruit flies, and they gave them a ethanol to temporarily put them to sleep, and then there was a group of people who gave intention to the fruit flies, and the ones that were intended upon woke up faster than the ones that were not. And it made me really look at not only fruit flies differently, but it really looks at how you can, with your individual thoughts, have some type of a solution to what's going on right now with our planet, whether it be the greenhouse effect, whether it be the trash that we are accumulating here with all the shipped in products from other countries, whether anything, you can look at it as all being very devastating. The facts are out there and they're very telling and they're very daunting. And it gives me this kind of hopeless feeling of, wow, what can I really do? But when you look at something like this, I mean, I know that you know about Greg Braden's work, and he is, by the way, my guest is Lynn McTaggart, who I'm speaking with, the author of The Intention Experiment and all of these experiments. On the website, it's theintentionexperiment.com. But the zero-point field that Greg Braden talks about in terms of the non-locality and all of that exists, that's what you were just talking about. Things don't happen in linear forms. They do, but not so much in this intention experience that you're talking about. It happens all at the same time in a non-linear, non-local way.
Absolutely. I mean, the existence of the zero-point field has two huge implications there. First of all, we're part of it, so we're all connected. And secondly, because it's made up of vibrating quantum waves, which stretch out into infinity, it demonstrates that we can be in touch with the furthest reaches of the cosmos. And also, of course, the field is a kind of memory bank of everything that's ever happened, in a sense. And quantum waves are, you know, accumulate information when they bump into other waves, and they're getting smarter every day, basically. So there's a lot of implication with this, and I'm definitely a great fan of Greg's work, and and also believe and have written about the field and believe that this is a repository of information that we are part of and we tap into. So we are non-locally connected, as you say, to everything.
Yeah, well, that it definitely makes a difference on how you live your life when you really understand about this stuff.
And I think that the other thing, too, is we're all connected, and we can access this information and be receivers as well as senders of intention. But we need to relearn how. And that's what I look at, and that's what I'm working on now with people in workshops and in my work, is tools. Tools to, you know, because what came across to me after writing these books is that the science that we're told and the way that, you know, the way that our world is described to us from a very early age is actually, we're actually looking at the world through a blurred lens. What's coming out in the frontiers of science now is a very different scientific story that describes a world that is all connected, a world that is not a set in stone with finite and separate objects operating according to nice, tidy little fixed laws. Everything is very different. And also our human potential, as we understand it, is just a glimmer of what it could be. And we have much, much more power to affect the world, to affect our lives, and to heal ourselves and the planet. So my work is about helping people access that information, too. I teach people in our workshops how to raise the antenna so that they can pick up this information. And it's remarkable how quickly you can. What? One of the things you need to do, yeah. And I've looked at and studied animals, autistic savants, all kinds of people who actually have great feats of psychic information. And all of them have the ability, or they're born into a situation, in a sense, being brain damaged, to turn off the cognitive brain, the thing that gets in the way, so that they can access that information flow that's coming to them all the time. And that's what we work on, too.
Now, what do you think is the main thing that people do incorrectly when setting intentions? Like, what's the most common foul?
Well, I think, first of all, they don't understand that they think that intention is a power thought, and that all the rest of their thoughts are locked up in their head. And, you know, and so they get out, you know, usually you pull out the big power thought when everything's going wrong in your life, you know, the wrong job, you get fired, your husband leaves you, mm-hmm. The kids run away. And then you pull out the big power thought, and you think that's the only one that's heard. And everything else just gets locked up in your head. But actually, from the science, we understand that we are senders and receivers of information at every moment, and that we're actually leaky buckets. We're sending out intentions all the time. So one of the things I work on with people is to demonstrate that, you know, usually 23 and a half hours of your day, you're sending out negative thoughts. And that actually becomes your intention. That becomes your life's intention.
Mm. I was speaking with Jay-Z Knight yesterday, and she was talking about, she channels Ramtha, and she was talking about those positive thoughts. And when you set out a positive thought, the positive thought is the absence of the negative thought, which means the negative thought is still present. It's like the light is the absence of the dark. And I thought, whoa, what a great way of looking at it, is that when you force positive intention, it's really the absence of negative, which still exists if you look at it in a quantum way, right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, you're, as you say, you're forcing it, and then you're just thinking, all the other 23 hours of your day, look at how you muffed that one, and, you know, everybody hates me, and I'm really ugly, and I'll never get this job, and all the other mind's chatter that we go on with all the time becomes our life's intention. And the other thing that people are very inconsistent. They send out the intention, let's say, to be good and altruistic and help the world, etc. But they have a job, then they go to their job and they kill the opposition. And they act very competitively in that situation, or they do something in their life or their work that harms the universe. And so, you know, in some way harms the earth or harms other kids or, you know, whatever. And so a lot of our work also is about helping people understand that their life is, in a sense, an intention.
Mm.
And, you know, what's that central mission statement? How do you define what is your mission statement, and how do you send out the positive and correct intention then?
It's interesting, though, Lynn, because I was involved with a business deal yesterday, and it started to go south because one of the other players really got his ego involved and really wanted to fight. And I was holding that space for just being, like, making it work, being positive about this, being ambitious about making everything work. And his negativity took over and tanked the whole deal.
Yes.
And when you're dealing with that size of an ego and that size of power, you... It sometimes you deal with the world, and there's a lot going on out there where I could see that there was such a better way to do this, but it was about him holding onto the power and him holding onto the control.
Yes.
And it's actually still in progress as we speak.
Well, that's very interesting. And that is also, you in a sense became a victim of his negative intention. And you know, and that's another thing that I look at a lot is how to, a lot of people, the other, I think, big misconception, I'll just segue from there if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
A lot of people thinking that you've got to walk around in a little psychic bubble, you know, just kind of zip yourself up in a,
right.
in a nice little psychic bubble to keep away from all this negativity.
Yes.
And I think if we're all one, then we have to somehow work together, somehow figure out a way.
And not get walked over at the same time.
And without being walked over, keeping your own thing, mm-hmm. but also understanding the connection and the common ground. And, you know, again, we create competition and all this negativity from a sense of separation and a need to be significant at someone else's expense. And so it's about, you know, in the bigger scale of things, it's about relearning, you know, how to exist in a sense in the world, how to do business in the world. But also one of the things that we work on with people is I find one of the most powerful things in holding on and not being deflated by a negative intention is something that Dr. John Diamond, the great healer, taught me about homing thoughts, as he calls them. And, you know, he finds a lot of people are, you know, he does a lot of behavioral kinesiology, muscle testing, and he finds that people, you know, test very weak whenever there's a toxic thought around or in some negative thought. But the thing that keeps them strong under any kind of battery of negativity is thinking of what they were put on this earth to do. And I mean their real divine purpose, not necessarily their job. And so I think that's a really powerful antidote, and I think that's why I work on the mission statement with people, you know, the life
yeah,
intention.
Right.
Because when you can focus on that and hold that thought, no matter what's coming at you, you stay strong.
Well,
and you stay in your truth, basically.
I did set intentions before I went into this arrangement, and it's not over yet. So I still think that I can create the highest possible, you know, benefit for everyone in it. As long as I hold on to that space, and it's, you know, I also, when you were talking just now, I was thinking, well, what am I doing to reflect this back to me? And that gave me a minute to just kind of step outside and look at it. So bottom line is, yes, you can use this in the real world. Yes, there's forces around you, but you can, as you're going through it, really learn from a lot of this. One of the listeners is asking how they get tickets to the Woodland Hills Marriott thing.
Well, thank you. I just want to make an offer out there because I love your show.
Oh, thanks.
Your show really precedes you, and so I wanted to offer all the listeners a special arrangement of $50 off our tickets, and they can come to the door at this stage.
Oh, cool.
At Woodland, it's the Woodland Hills Marriott, the Warner Center, Center in Woodland Hills, and just buy a ticket at the door. We start at 7 o'clock on Friday night. It's 3 hours on Friday,
oh, cool.
all day Saturday, and Sunday morning till 1. And we're also going to do a little raffle, a little special offer with your readers, too. We'll give away 2 free tickets. We're going to draw 2 names out of the hat from all of the people that sign up from the Awareness Show. Just announce that you're from the Awareness Show, and
okay.
2 of you will get a free ticket and won't have to pay.
Oh, wow. So you'll give them their money back, essentially.
Yeah,
or something
absolutely.
At the event.
Yeah.
Very nice of you. Thank you so much.
Not at all.
No, that's good.
I've heard your show, and
wow.
I really love it.
You.
I would like to support it.
I'm honored, Lynn, because you're amazing. And you've heard of my, that's just, thank you.
Not at all.
Very much
not
of that.
At all. Absolutely.
And you even live in London, which is awesome.
I know. I spend some time here in LA. So
well,
I love coming here. I have dear friends here, lifelong friends here. So I love coming back.
So what are they doing at the event on Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Okay,
are they
well,
setting?
Friday, we start out talking a bit about the science, but then we start playing very easily. And I start with an great experiment, which is we put intention in water. And we have people try to intuit what's in the water. So I want to show people how you are picking up information all the time, and the results will astonish you.
Wow.
And then we talk about, I have a guest speaker who is Brian Hubbard, who is my partner and works with me and wrote and helped me with a whole Living the Field course that we write.
Great.
And he's created with that course a whole Living the Field sort of a framework for why people get their intentions going wrong all the time and what's going on and how their emotions get in the way and how to overcome that. And there's a wonderful, it's a whole structure and a really brilliant, I think, solution to the problem most people have in misunderstanding who they really are. And we show people how to power up. Then we also show them how to raise the antenna, how they can be better receivers of information, and all the techniques that I tried to distill from studying everything from animals to the planets to all sorts of things, and how they can be more intuitive. We also practice that, but then we start working in groups, and this is what really gets exciting. We start doing healing of people with health challenges in the audience. And then we do small intentions together, send them home, they report back the next day, and, miracles happen. It's
wow.
Quite amazing. And then we work on negative intention, and then we work on your life's intention and how to define that, how to get to it. So it's quite a packed weekend. It's called Living with Intention because I wanted to move beyond, as I say, just the idea that intention is manifesting stuff for you. Because, that's mm-hmm. what people think about it all the time, just mm-hmm. manifesting stuff, that you can live your life with intention, and that you can create and you can heal with intention, and you can heal the planet with intention.
Wow. So this is putting it into a practical way in your life and figuring out how to do this, and especially if anyone has a health challenge, that are willing to move it and willing to play along and willing to let it go.
Absolutely.
That's great. Now,
within a healing space, because what happens too is we keep people in the same group all weekend, and so people forge really strong bonds.
Nice.
And they give we create that on the website too, so they can carry on the journey together after it's finished, whether it's in cyberspace, as many of our groups do, or whether they want to meet physically.
Is there any information on the internet about the Woodland Hills Marriott event?
Yes, people can come to www.theintentionworkshops.com.
Ah.
And we've got some videos there of some people who have gone to our workshops and some clips of me and lots of other things. So
okay.
They'll get loads of information from theintentionworkshops.com.
Okay, maybe we can come and set intention for the Aware Show website to work, because we've been working on this for six months now. And so I just met with someone else today. So as I learned, it has already happened that
Absolutely.
The website is working wonderfully. And so people will be able to get all of the information from the Aware Show website soon enough and from KPFK through that. But for now, they can go to theintentionworkshops.com till we can get all of this stuff working. And
Absolutely. Then we'll start sending intention for you.
Yeah. Thank you. Now, a lot of people have been asking exactly like how, there seems a lot of questions are coming in about this negativity. You mentioned one thing, what to do if you have a negative intention. And those seem to be the phone calls that are coming in right now. How does Brian explain that? You said something about negative intention.
He explains it. It's hard to go into it in just a few minutes.
Right.
But he explains that rather than we think of ourselves as a single entity, and actually there are three, we have three selves. And what he explains is most of our negative intention occurs in a thing he calls the emotional body, and where it's sitting and how it stays and what's going on with it and how to distance yourself from that.
And that's our subconscious programming, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah. It's okay. All of our emotion, all from the past, becomes a separate entity to us. So how to understand that, how to distance yourself, that's really what he works on.
I love that.
Yeah, and then we also look at, with negative intention, we look at, the big problem is oftentimes, as I say, you think that you just have this one moment of an intention, and all the rest of the time, you're not sending anything. So how to start learning to be conscious of what you're sending all the time.
Okay.
We start working on that. And also your effect on everything. We're affecting everything. We're affecting, electronic equipment. I mean, if I'm in a bad mood, I start breaking computers all over the place.
Wow, that's strong.
I even break photocopiers.
Is that because you know how to really focus your intention, or sometimes it happens by accident, or is it anyone can do that?
I think anyone can do that, but
okay.
I guess certain people have. I think I have an intense force field or something like that,
mm-hmm.
and so if I'm in those very rare occasions that I'm in a bad mood, I can break things around me. And, you know, I always fear that if that I can do that to equipment, what am I doing to other people?
Or yourself, yes.
Or myself. So that, and of course, many people, you know, their negative intentions literally eat them alive. You know?
True. So, and they poison a room, too, yes.
And poison a room, absolutely. So it's learning to become conscious. You know, half of our problem is just not being conscious and learning to how to deal with that and how to stop that almost automatic
and when you also,
information flow.
Yeah, and when you get around those types of people who are in that space, how you can maybe turn it around with who you're being or the intention that you're setting.
Yes.
And maybe not have that toxic field either get to you or change the toxic field.
Yes. You know, and I have it's interesting. Somebody warned me. I was speaking in an event not long ago, and they said, you know, some loonies come to this. You're really going to be attacked. You know, you've got to be really careful. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to just speak in a big, open, loving way, and I'm not going to be on my guard at all. I'm going to just be warm and open and just tell everybody what I think and feel, and this is my truth, and this is how, you know, I perceive things, but I'm not going to stand as any ultimate authority. And I had the most polite,
wow,
caring, loving audience, and they very respectfully came up afterward and talked to me one by one,
so
and there wasn't
works.
Any hecklers in the audience. So
good to know that
experience
works
for me.
All right, Lynn McTaggart has been my guest. Thank you so much for all that you've offered, and you can go to the intentionexperimentworkshops.com to find out about the Woodland Hills workshop.
It's the intentionworkshops.com.
Oh, thanks, the intentionworkshops.com. All right, thank you so much, Lynn. You've been wonderful. It's good to talk to you.
Thanks so much, Lisa.
All
my
right.
Pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And while it's my intention to bring you this clearest intention, the clearest information possible, I always ask you in the end to stay aware. Until next time, this is Lisa Garr. You've been listening to The Aware Show.